Daniel chapter 7 on Through the Word, known among Jewish scribes as the greatest chapter. It gives us a sweeping view of history in advance. Here at the halfway point of Daniel, there is a dramatic shift from story to prophecy. The chronological stories of Daniel's life are completed, and here we find a collection of prophetic visions, truly the most astounding prophecies in accuracy and precision to be found anywhere. Now, Daniel 7 is another puzzle box top, giving the big picture of prophecy to help us fit all the little pieces together in the rest of the Bible. Pay attention. God doesn't predict the future just to show off. He is showing us where all of history is headed. Let's jump in at verse 2. Daniel said, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven, churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came out of the sea." So the vision is four beasts. Reading ahead in verse 17, an angel will explain to Daniel that the four great beasts are four kingdoms that will rise from the earth. Basically, four beasts, each in turn attempting to take over the world. And no, none of them are lab rats, though they have been known to try to take over the world now and then. Now, the prophecy of four beasts here in chapter 7 is very similar to the statue in chapter 2, with four parts representing four kingdoms. They predict the very same kingdoms, only from a different perspective. In chapter 2, we saw man's view, the great empires of power, like a brilliant statue carved out by the hands of men. Here we will see God's point of view, the ruthless and destructive kingdoms of man, devouring and destroying their neighbors like brute beasts. Yet in both cases, they will come and go, and something very different will take their place. So what are these beasts? In verse 4, the first was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. Beast number 1 is Babylon. A lion with wings was their national emblem. They ruled from 626 to 539 BC. This vision came in the middle, 553. Beast number 2 is in verse 5. "And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth." The bear is the Medo-Persian Empire, 536 to 331 BC, in what is today Iran, raised on one side to show the greater strength of the Persians. With an army of 2.5 million, the Medo-Persian forces were strong and lumbering like a bear, and the three ribs in its mouth are likely the three great empires they devoured, Babylon, Egypt, and Lydia. Beast number 3 is in verse 6. "After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard, and on its back it had four wings like those of a bird. This beast had four heads, and it was given authority to rule." The leopard is Greece, whose army was only a fraction of their foes, but moving fast and striking with precision, they conquered far and wide. The four wings are the four mighty generals of Alexander the Great, and the four heads represent a kingdom split between those same four generals after Alexander died. Chapter 11 will deliver great detail on this one, still far in advance. Greece ruled from 331 to about 146 BC. And in verse 7, a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. The Roman Empire did just that. Known for their brutality and callous violence, the beast trampled everything and enforced the Pax Romana at the end of a short sword. And there at the end of the verse, it had 10 horns. Animal horns in the Bible symbolize kings or rulers, the center of power, just like the horns of a ram or rhinoceros. The 10 horns here are likely a jump into the future to the final empire, matching up with the 10 toes of the statue in chapter 2. The Roman Empire became Europe, and in Bible prophecy, the kingdom of Antichrist in the last days is often related to a rebuilt Roman Empire, and usually with 10 distinct leaders or centers of power. A lot of speculation on how all this will play out, but in verse 8, Daniel focuses in on the horns, and another one rises up among them, with eyes and a mouth speaking boastfully. This one pictures Antichrist himself. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, Daniel's vision turns sharply to to one of the most awesome and most important visions in the entire Bible in verse 9. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. The Ancient of Days, God himself, takes his throne and sets up court. I love this name for God. Now, ancient is not the same as old. God hasn't just lived a lot of days, he has lived all of them. He is the Eternal One, no end and no beginning, who was and is to come. Now, the description of the Ancient of Days bears a lot in common with the description of Christ in Revelation 1. Yet I think this is the Father. A little resemblance stands to reason. His throne is flaming with fire. Fire is a powerful picture of holiness, and a river of fire flows from before him. I'll leave the interpretation to your study. But whatever meaning that you discover, do not miss the sheer awesomeness of God on his throne. Back in verse 10, thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. The very books of heaven, and there are several. It would appear that these books are for the judgment of the kingdoms, the beasts that we just saw, and most importantly, the Antichrist. The horn keeps on in his boastful words, but in verse 11, the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. And then in verse 13, we find the King of all kings and the destiny of all kingdoms. In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. The term son of man refers to the Messiah, emphasizing that he is in fact human. Jesus referred to himself with several titles, but his most often used was Son of Man, always alluding to this very chapter. And here he arrives with the clouds of heaven, which could be a reference to the second coming, except that will happen on earth. This scene appears to be in heaven, so some scholars believe it took place when Jesus ascended with the clouds in Matthew 28, going up from earth and approaching the Father's throne in heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. And that is the message of this whole book, and what this whole world is coming to. The reign of the Son of Man, of Jesus Christ, the only rightful and fit ruler, with an everlasting dominion that will not pass away. Guys, please spend some time here in chapter 7. This chapter is so big and so glorious, you just gotta stand in awe for a while. But for those of us here on earth, still messing around under the power of the beastly kingdoms of man, where does that leave us? Well, Daniel was in a similar position. And when he gets the interpretation of all this, there's a powerful encouragement in verse 17. The four great beasts are four kings that will rise from the earth, but the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. So I tell you, choose your king carefully, because the king that you serve today determines the kingdom that you will inherit for eternity.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.